Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right-hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 154 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include December 20th at the Virgil in Los Angeles. That is the championship edition. December 26th at Great Scott in Boston, and closing out the year, December 28th at Union Hall in Brooklyn. That's where today's show is recorded, back on October 25th, 2015, featuring Josh Gondelman, Mike Drucker, Noah Garden-Swartz, and Tim Dillon reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. First, you'll hear them draw topics, then we will fast forward into the future to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy.
Your suggestions this evening, Josh Gondelman, Mike Drucker, Tim Dillon, and Noah Garden-Swartz. So, here's how this part works. We're going to start with Noah. Noah Garden-Swartz, step up to that mic, my friend. Clap your hands for Noah. So, if Noah likes the first suggestion, he can take it and run with it. If he doesn't like it, I will draw a second one, and then he will have to vote, or you guys will have to vote on which one he has to write. Your first option is the incredibly overrated podcast, Welcome to Night Vale.
I have no clue what the fuck that is, so we will go with the second one.
My own heart. Morrissey is your second suggestion. All right. Who wants to hear Welcome to Night Vale?
Morrissey. Losers. Is.
Got Morrissey. No Garden Swartz. Give me one for Tim Dillon. Your first option is Rick and Morty. Taking it? Yeah. Second one?
Second one.
Second one. All right. CSI is your second option. Who wants to hear Rick and Morty? CSI. Go fuck some corpses. Tim Dillon. Keep it going for Mike Drucker.
Hello.
Your first option is Mayor Bloomberg. New York, New York!
Yeah, I'll take it. All right.
And finally, Mr. Josh Gondelman. Breakfast Club is your first option.
All right. What a groan, as if the Brooklyn hipsters are like, this movie everybody likes, not for us. Let's hear the second one, please.
Superfly Jimmy Snuka is your second option. Who wants to hear The Breakfast Club? Who wants to hear Jimmy Snuka? I don't feel like you guys are on board with either of those. I always want to show and I do what I want.
Did that one say Josh Gondelman? That's my name.
That's who he is. Last one, we gotta do something good. We already had a little bit of that. Man, really.
CSI.
What does that say?
They all say NCIS.
Wanna see some corpses?
Real Housewives. You're talking Real Housewives. Josh Gondelman, clap your hands. Competitor, Mr. Are you guys ready for round two?
Yeah.
Are you ready for round two? Josh Gondelman, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, everyone. So I'll be reading about the Real Housewives.
Yes.
Just as a refresher. Here's the secret of housewives. They're all real housewives. Every housewife is, in her own way, an actual housewife. So you're probably very familiar with the totally authentic housewives of Atlanta and Miami. The ones from Orange County who are basically under-the-table sex workers. And the ones from wherever the one who is in jail is from. Either New Jersey or wherever else people perpetrate New Jersey-style crimes. But tonight we're here to bring you the tale of the Real Housewives of Omaha, Nebraska. Housewives so authentic and guileless, the very idea that there would be a show about them would make them say, oh, geez, that sounds like an awfully show businessy thing. One that the big city housewives in Lincoln would be better equipped to handle. But here goes. It was 2 p.m. on a crisp October day in Omaha. Beth Horn, wife of former Mayor Stephen Horn, was home alone, as she was every afternoon. Her husband was at the local Elks Lodge receiving free drinks on the strength of the power he once held to alter the zoning regulations that allowed the lodge itself to exist mere 700 feet from an elementary school. An alteration that had led to numerous drunk driving fatalities and several tabled motions to repeal the new ordinance as long as the Coors Lights were poured long and clear when the mayor came around. Beth herself had just downed her second glass of wine of the afternoon. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, she reasoned. Technically true, but unaware she was talking about a swath of the Atlantic Ocean barely inhabited. She'd exhausted all her traditional afternoon pursuits, writing a letter to the FCC to complain about the dancing on one late-night comedy show or another had been too groin-centric. Looking through her children's underwear drawer for marijuana or anything, honestly. Anything to change the pace of her life. Looking askance at people of color while she grocery shopped. Now it was time for the last task of the day. Running an empty load of laundry while she sat astride the machine, the one entity in the house who would acknowledge her desperate, derelict clitoris. She had folded her slacks, Liz Claiborne, from Marshall's, irregular, but you couldn't tell to look at them, and was cranking the machine up to full load, whites and colors, when the doorbell rang. Amazing. She hustled pantslessly up the stairs and answered the door. It was probably just her husband, Stephen, home early from the Elks Lodge and forgetting that he couldn't open the front door by screaming, "Do you know who I am? I used to be mayor!" at it. Exasperated, Beth flung the door open to reveal Linda Darling. Well, technically her name was Linda Darling Castle, but she thought the hyphen made her sound too Jewish. Oh dear, Beth exclaimed. I thought you were Stephen. She blushed, ashamed to be seen in her undergarments. Oh, no trouble at all, Linda replied. I just came by for a cup of sugar. Beth sighed, a great sigh of relief, and she looked at Linda, really looked at her for the first time in a long time. They'd gone to high school together, sure, and they'd been neighbors since then, but she never saw Linda anymore. She usually looked through her. She noticed, for the first time in forever, Linda's rosy pink cheeks, her, I don't know, standard white person blonde hair. And her butt, sculpted by her mom jeans to look mom-like, a.k.a. fertile. Well, I have something sweet for you, Beth whispered, surprised at her own boldness. She grabbed Linda's hand and led her into the living room. Both of their hearts pumped intensely like the engines of their husbands' riding mowers. Their bodies had been neglected for so long, first by their school's sex ed department, then by their history of lovers, their high school sweethearts, whom they married at age 19, and now even by themselves. Beth and Linda knew they were about to have what the woman at the book club, which had been alternating between 50 Shades of Grey and Gone Girl for an entire year, what those women described as a lesbionic experiment. Unfortunately, because neither woman lived in a household with premium cable or had been encouraged to seek out potential sources of her own pleasure on the internet, neither one knew how to make a particularly good lesbian. So their lovemaking was rather hetero-replicative. Beth slapped Linda on the ass hard, as her own husband often did, and hissed, "Do you like that whore?" Linda did not like that. Not that that's the wrong thing to like, she just didn't. She wanted to have her hair spit in. Honestly, obviously Beth had never liked that either. That's just how she thought sex started. She then asked Linda to please take off her pants and bra, explaining she'd never learned how to unhook a bra. She knew, but her husband didn't. She was just playing the part. Then she lay it upon her and humped labia on labia for 2 vigorous minutes. Neither woman enjoyed the humping. Each woman's vagina was as hot as an acre of cornfield on a summer's day, but twice as dry. That then rolled off Linda and lay limp beside her, cooing, "Oh, fuck, baby, you're so good. You're so good." As her husband did 2 minutes in each time they made love. 4 times yearly, 1 each on their birthdays, once on the 4th of July, and once on the first day of Cornhusker football. Linda, emboldened by her old friend's forthrightness, stood up and pulled Beth to her feet. She bent Beth over a bar stool, the way her husband often did to her, and mashed her junk up against Beth's butt, making sure to gently moan "Craig" every 5 or 6 pumps before whispering, "Oh shit, I mean you, my beautiful female wife." Stop groaning like you didn't know what show you came to. After a full hour of pumping and thrusting, with both of them bone dry as a creek bed on August 18th, Linda lay on her stomach sobbing and croaked out, "I'm sorry, babe, I just have a lot on my mind at work. Lots of banking at the banks, just, you know, so many withdrawals and deposits. And my boss Craig's really been riding my ass, so..." Sincerely, neither one felt satisfied. They felt embarrassed, ashamed of their infidelity, but also of their unawareness of their own bodies and the acute awareness of their husband's inadequacies and secret desires. For the first time in maybe years, they felt sure of their own needs and wants, to break free of the customs with which they were raised, and live deeply, honestly, wildly, like the women in Lifetime movies do after they kill their husbands. But without killing their husbands, probably. Both women wept, raggedly. They did not look at each other. They were so painfully in tune with their aching yearning, but so unable to bring it to fruition. They thought maybe they could never face each other again. But then Beth had an idea. "Come with me," she said, taking Linda by the hand. The two women went down to the basement and sat, facing away from each other, astride the washing machine. Linda pressed start. For the first time, maybe in their lives, Linda and Beth had furious, howling orgasms. "Golly," they screamed. "Mother of milk, holy toast cooking crumbs." Then, when they had finished, each woman returned to her own living room, poured a glass of wine, and waited for their children to return home from school high on glue fumes. Thank you.
Just got him. Good job, buddy. Desperate, derelict clitoris. Keep it going for, you ready? Tim Dillon!
Thank you guys very much. Anything in my voice is going to sound sexual. And racist, because I have a horribly racist voice. It's not my foot's Long Island, it's just a problem. That's amazing. This is about CSI, guys, which I don't watch, but I wrote something I like. It's called Love Splatters. Las Vegas, Nevada, New Year's Day, early morning. A pay-by-the-hour motel off the strip. Gil and Catherine are on their way to another crime scene. Another murder, another single female found dead in an unusual position. Another unlucky person in a city built on rolling the dice. As they drive... I wish that was in CSI, the show, that laugh. I would watch it. As they drive there, Catherine is especially conscious of her love of blood. Ever since a young girl, it's the only thing that made her feel alive. She remembers the first time she scraped her knee and the beautiful crimson liquid coagulated on her pale skin. She is, after all, a thing I didn't know existed, a blood splatter analyst. The only thing in life she ever truly loved was analyzing where blood came from. What angle, what organ did that beautiful discharge emanate from? As she couldn't share her love with her colleagues, she couldn't tell them how she could only reach orgasm when thinking of blood. And not only blood, but splattered blood. Whether it be small dots or large pools. The only thing that ever mattered was it was one time pumping through the body of a human being. I mean, Catherine loved her daughter. She liked bagels and sunsets and long walks, but nothing. And I mean nothing was a good trail of splattered blood. Gil noticed that she was oddly quiet as she entered the room. A woman lay on the bed. She was contorted in an odd sexual position, her legs behind her head. The woman had been dead several hours, it appeared. Gil, a consummate professional, couldn't help noticing the woman's uncharacteristic good look. She looked more like a model than a call girl. Another thing that was strange was that there wasn't any blood. Not one drop. In fact, the cause of death wasn't really even apparent. Catherine was visibly disappointed, even angry. Why the fuck am I even here? She asked incredulously. I'm a blood splatter analyst. There's no blood. Not one drop. How can you tell this crime happened without seeing the patterns? I don't do hair. I don't do semen. I'm strictly blood. Where's, I'm going to say Warwick, I guess. Yes, thank you. You're the head writer of CSI. Where's Warwick? Why isn't he here? Maybe he's calling his book. He's a degenerate gambler. What the fuck is an audiovisual an analyst? Can't we all listen to voicemails? There's more to it than that, said Gil. He wondered where Catherine's attitude was coming from. Gil went to check the bathroom quickly, and in the minute he was gone, Catherine took a small razor she kept in her bag and nicked the woman's leg. I didn't do that, Catherine. A small red pool began to form on the bed. Catherine felt herself getting wet. She began to move the sheet so that the blood started to splatter and go everywhere. And Gil walked back in. What the fuck? When I left, she wasn't bleeding. Catherine said excitedly, they're always bleeding, Gil. Gil was perplexed, but for the first time he noticed how attractive the ex-stripper Catherine was in a whore-turned-housewife way. He couldn't stop sexualizing her. The one thing he couldn't understand was that she could never get enough blood. Every crime scene never had enough for her. Once there was a whole tub of blood, and Catherine said, well, it's only one tub. It's only one tub, Gil. I mean, there's oceans of blood we haven't discovered. As she said that, she was touching herself. What? I have an itch. Gil never brought it up again. But as he was looking at her sitting in the bed, he noticed her for the first time. She had made so much of herself. At one time, she was stripping down the block. Now she was raising her daughter, and God damn it, if she didn't know her blood. She could look at one drop on the counter and tell you how it got there. It flew out of his carotid artery, she would say. That's why it's clean. She would stand there lipping her lips. As she sat on the bed, she lost herself in her bloodlust. She dropped any idea of professionalism. She started to finger paint with this woman's blood. Gil was shocked. What the hell are you doing? This is my process. Catherine said as she began to spell out two words in blood. What? Does that say fuck me? Gil asked, both shocked, disgusted, and both. Yes, it does, Catherine says. Fuck me in this whore's blood. Catherine, that's not legal. Or even safe. I think we should raid for the rest of the team. Knowing that Gil was an entomologist and sort of sensitive about that, Catherine challenged his manhood. Would you fuck me if I was an ant? Is that what you want to do? Fuck ants. I had originally written ants, you faggot, but I said, no, that's too much. But again, she's cutting someone, so it would be believable that she would say that word, even though it's not right. She's cutting someone's leg and fingering herself with blood. So, but I even said, we're going to still drop the word. So you're welcome. I'm a gay person. I still said, we're not going to say it. They won't like it. They won't get it. So now Gil noticed Catherine was rubbing the blood all over her breast. Gil also noticed how the woman's dead body looked like a praying mantis. He's an entomologist. How do they get these jobs? It's like the weirdest. They're all like weird. Like, I'm a blood spot. I'm an entomologist. Now it's like an odd group. He's a zookeeper. Now he does this. It's like an odd... Well, as Gil felt himself getting hard, I guess we could spend some time analyzing our own splatter. He smiled at his thought. He mounted Catherine from behind. Her entire head was covered in blood. She was so excited. She yelled, "This is AB negative. It's so rare." That is a rare one. If you're into blood, you know O is like, whatever, who gives a shit. But AB negative, that's some good, you know, that's like hipster blood. You guys like that, you know what I mean? It's organic. This is even so rare. As Gil entered Catherine, he felt that this was a slightly inappropriate way to conduct an investigation. But he reminded himself, sometimes the answers were found when you think out of the box, and although now he was thinking in the box. Catherine and Gil, I'm not proud of that. Catherine and Gil, I'm writing blood porn here. Catherine and Gil made love using the woman's blood as a lubricant. Catherine smiled after reaching orgasm and she looked at Gil and said, "I love my job." Thank you guys so much.
Tim Dillon. Keep it going for Mike Drucker.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and I have named my story New York's Hardest. It was his last day in office. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the littlest big man of New York, walked into 7-Eleven with his gun in one hand and hard dick in the other. Both were too heavy for one man to carry. "Oh shit," said the man behind the counter, "it's Michael fucking Bloomberg!" Everyone in 7-Eleven tried to run, but a few shots from Bloomberg's Uzi into the ceiling and bodyguards from New York's finest stopped them. They were all in there with Bloomberg, and he wasn't stopping till his dick or his gun were empty. Or both, that would also be okay. "That's right, assholes, you motherfuckers thought I wouldn't visit 7-Eleven," asked Bloomberg. It wasn't a question. "Oh, I always visit 7-Eleven. "Hey, Mr. Mayor," this was from one of 7-Eleven's managers, a beautiful babe named Tanya who looks exactly like Brittany Berkowitz, Mike Drucker's crush from high school. This time, though, she wasn't rude to anyone named Michael. That's a real name. Doesn't matter. She has a family now. She's fine. Her kids aren't great. And she goes, we don't want any trouble." Bloomberg didn't care. "You don't want any trouble? You think I'm just here for my fucking health? I'm a billionaire. I shop at Whole Foods when I want to buy organic food to wipe my ass with." Tanya asked, "You wipe your ass with food?" "Silence," said Bloomberg. Then he held up a cup in his hand. It was the largest soda possible, a big gulp. "Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm stupid in the head. I don't know. I'm getting older. I'm dumb. But I think I fucking banned these." One man stepped forward. "You can't tell us what to do. This is America." He was a tall man in his 40s. He was a good father to his children. His oldest just got into a really good private kindergarten. He taught Sunday school in his free time, and none of that could save him. "No," said Mayor Bloomberg. This isn't New York. It's Bloomberg Town. "Now, you want the gun or the dick?" And the guy went, I don't understand. Bloomberg looked around. He laughed to himself. And nobody has ever been more goddamn scared in their fucking lives. He goes, "Oh, he doesn't understand. You hear that? He doesn't understand. You either get shot or you suck my dick. Now make the choice, motherfucker. Do you get it now?" And the guy goes, "I don't understand." Boom, Bloomberg shot him in the head. "You understand that shit?" Then there was a voice from the back. "Excuse me." A giant push through Bloomberg's guards. "I believe this is out of your jurisdiction now." Bloomberg turned around. "Welcome to the party, Mayor Bill de Blasio. May I have this dance?" Bloomberg started swinging his dick around like a nunchuck. It cut through there, going. Bill de Blasio goes, "You want me for this dance? Well, you got me for the whole prom." He starts swinging his dick, and on his dick there was a tattoo with a pot leaf over a peace symbol. Because it's Bill de Blasio, and probably, right? "Nice tattoo," said Bloomberg. "Did your mom give it to you?" And the blonde went, "My mom's dead." And Bloomberg went, "I guess that's why she was so cold last night." The two ran at each other. They slapped dicks with enough energy to make shockwaves that threw boxes off the shelf like it's an anime. You know what I'm talking about. Like macaroni and cheese and shits flying off the shelf. Slap, slap, slap. Eat Slap was wet and hard and masculine. And then it became exhausted. Bloomberg was like, "That's quite a dick, de Blasio." And de Blasio was like, "You too. Maybe we should work together. Maybe we should be friends." Bloomberg said, "I don't know, Bill. You seem like your voice hurts." And Bill was like, "Excuse me?" And then Bloomberg said, "You seem a little hoarse." Then a horse jumped into the 7-Eleven and started fucking de Blasio in the ass. And Bloomberg's like, "Come on, Crop Duster, give it to him!" The horse's name is Crop Duster in this story. With powerful legs that could not be denied, the horse started fucking Bill de Blasio in the ass. And then Bill de Blasio was like, "Damn you, Bloomberg, it's a horse! Why did it have to be a horse?" And that's why, until this day, Mayor Bill de Blasio is trying to ban horses in New York City. Little known fact. All right. So, with de Blasio out of the way, Bloomberg turns back to the staff and customers of that 7-Eleven. He's stroking his old ass dick, and it's getting real hard. And he's like, you want some? You?" And they're like, no, I don't want any. He's like, "You want? No, I don't want any." And then finally, Tanya says, "Stop it! Let me suck your dick! I'll suck your dick. First of all, I'm extremely turned on by a shorter Jewish man with no hair. And second, if I make this decision in the story consensually, then Mike Drucker won't feel bad for writing it. So let me suck that dick consensually like a lady." Bloomberg stroked his cock. Some people might say it looked like a baby arm with a baby's head, but since he's a short man, it really looked like his arm with his head. And it was the same color. So Tanya got on her knees and started sucking his dick. "Oh yeah," said Mayor Bloomberg. "Take this key to the city." He kept thrusting at her throat, the key unlocking all her pleasures. Oh yeah, this is better than the Mets eating at Katz's Deli," is a thing I would assume he would say. "Don't come yet," said Tanya to Mayor Bill de Blasio, and by an extension, me. "Don't come yet." Too late, I'm coming. 9-11. Mayor Bill de Blasio came in Tanya's mouth, and it was a lot. It was like flowing out of her mouth, and she wiped it away, and she looked at him and went, "Now that's a big gulp." And that's my story. Thank you very much.
Mike Drucker. Giving off your final competitor, Noah Gardenswartz. All right, I got Morrissey, and I did the best I could, despite the fact that I do not know any of his music, because I'm not a little bitch. It's 3 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon, and Morrissey is at a pub in London drinking with Elton John and Paul McCartney. They're playing Fuck, Marry, Kill using British singers, and Elton John's options are Liam Gallagher, Mick Jagger, and Adele. Elton decides he'd marry Mick Jagger, kill Liam Gallagher, and fuck Adele, presumably because she's broad enough to pass as a man in the dark. A few more laughs are shared as a few more rounds are bought when a drunk Morrissey finally gets the courage to voice his displeasure about the fact that despite being a legendary British musician, he hasn't been knighted by the Queen like they have. Paul looks to Elton and asks, "Should we tell him?" Elton says, "Oh, for fuck's sake, why not?" Morrissey is desperate to know their secret. Elton John leans back in his chair and takes a sip of Guinness as the foam leaves a creamy brown mustache on his top lip, reminiscent of the poop-cum mixture that he so regularly enjoyed as part of the dick-sucking, salad-tossing combination his boyfriend lovingly refers to as their Saturday night diet. Elton looks at Morrissey and says, "If you want to be knighted, you've got to fuck the Queen." An incredulous Morrissey waves his hand and scoffs when Paul McCartney, shuddering like a Vietnam vet suffering from flashbacks, says, "It's true, lad. Hardest time I've ever had maintaining an erection, and I used to fuck a woman with a fake leg." Am I the only one who knows about British pop culture? Morrissey, determined to be knighted, says he'll do it and asks if they can help arrange it. Paul texts Queen Elizabeth, "You up?" She quickly responds with an eggplant emoji. Paul texts her that Morrissey is interested in becoming a knight. And she quickly responds, "Tell that whiny bitch that he better eat pussy as good as his lesbian's haircut insinuates." Paul relays the message and texts back that Morrissey is on his way. In order to mentally prepare, Morrissey asks what the queen's pussy smells like. Elton and Paul both look off in the distance as they simultaneously say under their breath, "Like bad fish and chips." Cut to Buckingham Palace. Morrissey is on his knees eating out Queen Elizabeth. Her old droopy pussy lips are so big, watching him search for her clit looks like he's flipping through a Rolodex. She's so wet that his face looks like the stew that Oliver Twist couldn't get a second helping of. I only do pop culture references from the 50s, by the way. Finally ready to fuck, Queen Elizabeth says, "That was a good warm-up, but if you really want to be knighted, show me that you've got Irish blood and an English cock." It's a Morrissey song. Morrissey whips it out, and the Queen's eyes grow big as Morrissey's penis shrinks, scared of what she's about to do. Sensing his apprehension, she whispers to his cock, "Let me kiss you. I just want to see the boy happy." Two more Morrissey songs, you fucks. Where are all these goddamn people who are happy about me doing Morrissey and don't know any of the goddamn songs from his catalog that I Googled in my car 10 minutes ago? Morrissey closes his eyes as Queen Elizabeth is taking all of him in her throat. He's holding onto her crown and wig as he fucks the face of the ruler of his country while he daydreams of Princess Di. Side note, he's daydreaming of dead Princess Di because Morrissey is secretly a necrophiliac. Queen Elizabeth is playing with her octogenarian wizard sleeve while she continues to blow. There's a sudden knock on the door as a royal advisor screams from outside the hallway, "Your Majesty, pick up on line one. Vladimir Putin is calling and he said it's urgent." Her top advisor, by the way, doesn't have an accent. He's American to ensure that shit actually gets done. Queen Elizabeth, who is turned on by the picture of a shirtless Putin riding his horse with nipples so hard they could cut glass, has secretly been waiting for this opportunity. The queen abruptly kicks out a crying, defeated Morrissey, who knows that now he'll never be knighted. She looks around to make sure nobody is around, picks up the phone and says, "Mr. Putin, will you be arriving shortly and putting yourself in me?" Putin is silent for 5 seconds before he says, "Get ready to squirt borscht. Because I'm about to beat that pussy up." Putin went on to fuck Queen Elizabeth, become the first Russian man ever to be knighted, and is now opening up for Morrissey on the second leg of his Eastern European tour. Thank you.
No dark sorts.
Here we go. Let's get everybody from round two back to the stage. Or just Mike Drucker. You know, whatever. Let's go, dipshits. Have you been knitting just to keep yourself from masturbating during the show? Is that just to keep the hands busy? She's knitting in the front row. Okay. Let's remind you all what everybody read. We started with Josh Gondelman with The Real Housewives, then Tim Dillon with CSI, Mike Drucker with Bloomberg, and Noah Gardenswartz with Morrissey. Gondelman had to run to another show, still eligible for victory. Vote for your favorite with your applause, starting with Josh Gondelman, Real Housewives. Tim Dillon, CSI. Mike Drucker, Bloomberg. And Noah Gardenswartz, Morrissey. I think that is the vacant Mr. Josh Gondelman with Real Housewives. Not even here to listen to his own applause. So let's all boo Josh Gondelman right now. Let's boo him aggressively. Tell him later how much they hated him. There it is. You guys, clap for yourselves. You've been the absolute best. Thank you so much for coming out.
I'll be back on December 28th doing this again. That show always sells out around Christmas. Buy your tickets in advance. Thanks to everybody here.
That does it for round two. To hear round one from this show, you can go back and download episode 153. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. And for more details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.